jump, 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 jump.
I said a hip hop, the hibbit of a hip hip hop, you don't stop.
Rap, 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 rap it up. I will definitely call you back later then.
Come on, wrap it up.
Big sharp it up.
Okay, you know what? Wrap up the circle thing. Come on.
Mr. Parker, wrap it up, please.
Okay.
Okay, everybody, that's a wrap.
That's a wrap. It's the end of the week here on the Pensacola Morning News. That means that I have invited a couple of friends here into the studio with me. We've got many-time repeat customer Ed Carson, the principal at Carson Level, and developer and a member of the zoning board. I always want to get this wrong in Santa Rosa County. Do I have it right, Ed?
Yes, you do. Good morning.
Very good. Good morning. Who I met through Leadership Santa Rosa? Leadership Pensacola?
I think we first met actually at a Republican meeting.
Okay.
I was the moderator for a debate.
Oh, okay. All right.
My first remembrance.
It's been a couple, anyway. Couple of months since since that happened. A
couple of years.
We also have Rhett Rawl, who is a teacher of government and economics at Jay High School. Is that right? At Jay High School. And he is also running for a District 1 commission seat in District 3 commission seat in Santa Rosa County, the north end, essentially. Rhett, welcome for the first time.
Thank you, Andrew.
All right. Very good to have you. So, I don't know. Let's get into it. I think probably the biggest news for Santa Rosa County in the last week has been the announcement yesterday that the Department of Environmental Protection for the state of Florida has issued the permit for the spray fields. So that means that we are almost there on the wastewater treatment plant. We need NEPA permission next, and then we can go out to contract, and we can get bids, and we can start turning dirt, and then eventually we can start actually doing what needs to be done. Big news, right?
Very big news. Very big news. This is something that obviously has been going on for years and years. And, you know, it's gotten to a point over there that Milton can't even take on any more sewage customers. So it's much needed. We need to get the effluent out of the river. I know there's some controversy over the location, but we've got to do something. The clock's turning, and there comes a point in time, I think, in 25 where the DEP is going to start levying a fine every day for putting effluent in the river. So.
Yeah, I think the date is January 1st of 26, and it's like
they may have moved it.
Yeah, it's like $100 a day, I think. They were talking about how, you know, Randy Jurgensen was making the comment that, you know, given that it's a $50-plus million project, $3,000 a month isn't really all that much money.
Right.
It's probably going up in price more than the fine would be levied, and there's been a lot of delays in this. And I just say this because there are some people always tuning in who may not know the full history of it, but the short version is the plant currently discharges into the Blackwater River, but because of shifting between, as I understand it, the salinity and the fresh water in that part of the river, they've got to move the effluent out of the river where it currently is. And in the plant that they're building, it won't discharge into the river at all. So if you ever hear somebody say, well, the plant's going to be polluting the river, that is not correct. But finding the spray fields to put the water into the ground, that's been, you know, one of the many challenges. Your thoughts on this? It's a big development for business, too.
Well, so earlier today, you were talking about the cell phone tower.
Yeah.
So it's a lot similar to that. We need it. Nobody wants it near them, but it's something that we've got to have. So that's where the, you know, everything is a balance, and this is no different. You know, we've got to find the solution to, you know, treat the most people with the least amount of impact.
And, you know, clearly the people who have been the most vocal against this project are the people who live right there in Cooper's Basin, where it's really close to them. Sure. And, you know, I think some of their concerns are fair, and a lot of their concerns have been exaggerated or, quite frankly, deceptive. But as you say, I mean, nobody wants to be close to it, but everybody wants to have treated sewer. Nobody wants to have the tower in their backyard, but everybody wants good cell service.
Right.
And so, you know, this is a problem in doing development, right, Ed, where, you know, we want to have the things in place infrastructure-wise, but either on the back end they're ugly or they're close to us and we don't like that, or we don't like the idea of it, or we just don't plan ahead and put it in ahead of time, right?
That's right. And probably the biggest thing, Andrew, is we all want infrastructure, but nobody wants to pay for it.
Yeah.
I mean, it all costs and it's all very expensive. The money's got to come from somewhere. And obviously there's different ideas of where these sources of revenue should come from, but everybody wants it, but nobody wants to pay for it.
So we've been having this conversation in Escambia County recently because Commissioner Bergosh, who was up for election, always talks a lot about concurrency. I'm not sure that he ever actually proposes it, and I'm hoping he does because I want to have this conversation in Escambia County. But the idea of concurrency being build the infrastructure at the same time as you're putting in the new homes, or at least in enough to accommodate the extra capacity demand on schools and roads and sewer and electric and everything else related, potentially everything else related to it. To me, the basic theory of concurrency is it's always more expensive to dig up and expand than it is to build it from the beginning. And so concurrency makes sense to me, but I don't know. Rhett, what do you think? Is concurrency the right way to go?
So it's just like when you do any project around your home, when you go and you add on an addition or whatever, whether it's a screened-in porch or whether it's a pool or whether it's, you know, just a remodeling, it's always more expensive on the back end. So, yeah, do it as early as you can while, you know, in Santa Rosa, we're behind. We're growing so fast, which is a good thing. People want to come live in Santa Rosa, but we've got to do as much as we can, as quick as we can. And like Mr. Carson was saying, it's not always a fun project because it's not pretty. Mm-hmm. You know, we sidewalks aren't really pretty. Lights around the road aren't always pretty. We'd rather see beautification projects, which are also great. But, you know, the need has to come before the want, and, you know, that's a great idea, yeah.
Concurrency, Ed, your thoughts as somebody who develops projects for a living?
Well, I think, again, it comes down to funding, mm-hmm. and how do you fund staying ahead of development? That's the tough issue. And, you know, I get it. It, like Rhett said, it's much easier to do it on the front end. But again, the funding's, where do you get the funds from, the, you know, all the planning? That's the tough part.
And to be fair, I think, and, you know, Stephen Barry, although I think his attitude towards concurrency is wrong, made the comment in a town hall last year where he said, you know, I don't think we can't fix the roads we've got. It's going to be a hard sell convincing the board to put money into building roads to places that don't even exist. And we've biked both counties in almost their entirety. I have seen a lot of places where clearly the infrastructure was there and there are not houses there. And the project fell apart, whether it was from the recession previously. I mean, it's hard to imagine there are places like that today, but there really are. There's a lot of projects in Santa Rosa County and Escambia County that have not happened for whatever reason. They're like vacant developments where the roads are there and the little green pipes are sticking up out of the ground, but there are no houses for whatever reason. So it does happen that you build the infrastructure first and then it just sits there, right?
It does. It happens much less here than other places, but
sure.
It certainly happens.
Yeah.
Or the project gets completely changed because interest rates went through the roof.
Right.
So now people can't afford the, you know, 3,000 square foot home. Now they're having to build for the 1,500 square foot or, you know, and everything changes. And that infrastructure that was in place is now has to be, you know, changed.
Or and I'm guessing, but Ed, tell me if I'm wrong, sometimes the other way too. The builders can't make a profit at $300,000, so they build nicer homes at $4,000 or $5,000 because that's where the profit is given the changes in the market. That, I assume that happens too.
Yeah. The builders just don't go out and arbitrarily start building houses. There has to be
don't?
No. No. Contrary to popular belief, that doesn't happen.
The city of Milton is...
Da-na-na-na.
It's yeah, that's right. It's such a weird blend of highly capable staff and some highly capable city council and members of the public, and then some others. And it's a lot of drama. It's a lot of entertainment. We talk, of course, I, you know, make fun of it all the time. But, you know, like, for example, this business with the wastewater treatment plant, you know, $15-plus million is no small shake for a town Milton size to be able to pull that together over the last, what, 4, 5, 6 years.
Right.
And some incredibly talented people work there. And so... And they just had a workshop where they went through and talked about the health of Milton and the financial health of Milton and how the audit that's been requested is basically bogus. I mean, it's a legitimate audit, but it's based on bogus claims about the city, and they're going to come back with a squeaky clean result. It's weird when the government works well, but it looks like it works terribly. As a citizen, how do you make sense of that?
So in education, you know, we've, especially at a small school like Jay,
yeah.
We've coached everything, and there's a need there. And... you know, the old saying, things are never as good as they appear, and they're also never as bad.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the same within government. It's the same within local government. You know, you have a group of people, for whatever reason, that are really pro a group or they're really anti a group. And the audit, you know, I would think that's going to show, you know, that we have a good group of people in Milton doing their job. And, you know, and that's going to make a lot of people happy, and it's going to make a lot of people upset and disappointed for whatever reason.
I find that, like, the city of Pensacola, which is a bigger city, you know, 50,000 people versus 10,000, has become boring to cover. Not always. There are occasional moments, but, like, the city council kind of functions well, and, you know, they get things done. And, I mean, there's been some drama lately with the gym and whatever, but generally I watch these meetings. I'm like, well, that's all good. I'll tell people that happened. Milton is far more entertaining to watch and still does run quite well in spite of it all. I mean, to some degree, there's a lot of problems internally. But I don't know, what do you make of just getting people to be interested in their government when it's sort of boring and good?
I think there's always going to be a core group that's interested, and I always think there's going to be a bunch of people that aren't. I don't know how to engage them. Mm-hmm. Part of what I've tried to do in the last 10 or 12 years since I've been more involved in Santa Rosa is to try to get some involvement, but it's hard. I mean,
is the zoning board fully staffed? I mean, yes. Fully mm-hmm. populated? Okay.
It is.
But that's always a challenge, right? Is finding enough people to be on these various boards, right?
It is, and it's hard work. It's long work. I mean, our meetings start at 6, and it's not unusual to last till midnight.
Mm-hmm.
And
you never make friends.
No,
you make a lot of critics.
Half the people love you and half the people hate you when you're done. So we talk about that before the meeting. We're all neighbors. We should try to get along. But some people are going to leave here and they're not going to be happy. It's just part of it. But
I think that is, I will be honest. I think before I lived here and mm-hmm. had to cover these things, I didn't even know that there were citizen committees in local government where you could work on stuff like that, that, you know, the Marine Advisory Committee or the Planning or the Zoning or the Architectural Review Board or all the different ones that there are. But it is it's a lot of work, as you say. It's a pretty big commitment. You don't get paid for it. But it really is a phenomenal way to get familiar with how government works and to have some input into the process if you think there are things about it that you'd like to change, right?
Yeah. And I actually chair the Lost Oversight Committee.
Local option sales tax, if people don't know.
Which was part of getting it passed in the first place. That was a provision that we in the business community asked be put in as part of it. But we have 10 people on the committee, and we'll be lucky if we have 2 people attend the meeting. So, you know, there's all this conversation about what are you doing with the money? Where's it being spent? Is it it's being wasted? It's clearly right there for you to come listen, give right. us your thoughts. I mean, come on, you know, we're open to that.
You don't even have to be on the committee, but just at least attend.
Show up.
The Tourism Development Council in Escambia County seems like half the time can't get a quorum, or it's a partial, like, you know, they're there to mm-hmm. discuss, they can't vote, or they got to, you know, wait for somebody to arrive, that kind of thing. A very important, you know, committee doing very important work, but finding the people. I mean, you teach government to the next generation of kids. I mean, are they interested? I know the job of teachers is to raise interest, but do you feel like they care a lot, or they care about graduating and getting their grade?
So during an election year, you know, those falls are always, there's a lot more, you know, look, this debate happened last night. You know,
right.
Look, this is where how they're campaigning. This is how much money they've raised. Why are they hitting these areas in the country? That those things are always a lot easier to grab their attention than on a non-election cycle where you're like, well, look at 4 years ago. This is what we did 4 years ago. Look at you know, this is what worked. This is what hasn't worked in the past. So, you know, there's still an interest in, you know, the debate always is when do you start teaching kids about government?
Yeah.
You know, in Florida, there's a 7th grade civics course, and then they don't get it again until they're seniors.
That's all they need.
Junior seniors.
But, you know, once every 5 years is good.
Sure, that's good. This is kind of like showing up to these meetings that Mr. Carson's talking about.
Yeah, right.
Just show up.
Just come to one, and you know everything you need to know.
Exactly, yeah. So, you know, there's always a grind there. I find that economics taking, you know, that right before they graduate, and you're able to say, okay, look, this is, if you want to do this, this is what you're going to make, and this is what it costs to live.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes, you know, you just have to make it interesting, and but it is there, especially as they get closer to graduation, the interest is in being involved is more important.
And I will say this, people might see the end product of me at 53 and my level of interest and knowledge and whatever, you know, but in high school, and I was on debate, I was interested in philosophy and politics, and I was a, you know, highly engaged AP kind of student, you know, I didn't know anything and, you know, cared some about some things, but, you know, people can develop interest later in life. They can become passionate about civic service later in life. They can, you know, become aware later. And that, even the teenagers who are disinterested, even the citizens who are at 25 or 30 or 40 are not interested. They might be later, because I've said this before many, but I'll say it again. You know, I didn't care about local politics at all. And I would never watch the local news anywhere I ever lived until here as part of the job. And now I'm like, oh man, this is so interesting. But it, I don't think it captivates a lot of people. Unless you present it in a way that it's kind of engaging to them, right?
Sure. And Santa Rosa, as Mr. Carson knows, you know.
I love that you call him that, by the way.
Well, he's Mr. Carson. He's Mr. Carson. You know,
I'm feeling old.
Can
Andrew.
I still call you Ed?
Yeah, you okay? Can. So can he, and I've asked him.
No, I know. And I've always said no. But campaigning, whether we're in Gulf Breeze, Navarre, Milton Pace,
yeah.
You know, and I'll say, well, I'm running for District 3. And they'll say, well, I can't vote for you. I live in Navarre.
Oh, my God.
And, in Santa Rosa, obviously, it's an at-large. It's everybody votes different than Escambia.
What I think is weird about that? They know they live not in District 3, but they don't know they can vote for any district.
Exactly.
Because I think a lot of times people don't even know what district they live in. It's hard to remember. I actually almost signed, because I will sign for any politician who's running that I'm eligible to sign for, and the independent running for District 2 for the State House was asking us to sign, and I don't live in District 2, but it took me, I was filling the form, like, oh, I live in District, I can't even do this. Even I forget, because knowing these lines, and it's different for every level of government, is hard to remember, right?
It is. And the other thing that I see a lot of is people don't seem to understand what the different levels of government are responsible for.
Amen.
Local government versus federal versus state.
And what can be done with different funds.
Correct.
Different pots.
And if they know one person who is their elected official, they will go to that person for everything because that's the person they know, which is a very understandable thing because it is very hard to really keep track of who is responsible for what. And, you know, so I know. And even when they're out of office, I hear this from people as well, that even they're out of office, people still call them because at least that's somebody they know. That they're connected. They used to have power and probably can at least point them in the right direction. We're talking to Rhett Rowell and Ed Carson here for The Wrap. Jake has got traffic on the 5. Jake?
Not seeing anything on our roadway slowing us down. If you do see anything out there, you can always call or text our traffic tip line. That number is 437-1620. I'm Jake Walker with your traffic on the 5s.
All right. I feel like I want to ask a controversial question, so feel free to say whatever you want to say, of course. But this week, former President Trump came out with $60 Bibles. The only Bible endorsed by President Trump. I find myself having real high levels of both sidesism on this. You know, my first reaction was, oh, good Lord. And then my second reaction was, well, maybe a bunch of people who don't read the Bible would read the Bible. And it's going to have like the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution inside, which is always a little bit cautious about adding material to the Bible because it's no longer than the Holy Bible. It's the Holy Bible plus some stuff. But I don't know. Thoughts? Rhett?
Mr. Carson, won't you take this one first?
Well, politicizing the Bible is totally out of bounds for me. So I can't endorse this. I just think the Word of God is the Word of God, and Mr. Trump putting his name on it or whatever and trying to raise some money, that's gone
impact.
Too far for me. No.
I'll go with that.
Quickest controversy ever.
But he's not keeping the money, right?
No,
Trump is not keeping the money.
It's not clear how the money flows. They say the money isn't going to him directly. It's to some organization or foundation. But they're also saying that he gets some kind of compensation for his appearance and for his endorsement. So, you know, is that 90% of the profits? Is that 1% of the profits? Is that a flat fee again?
I don't think he puts his name on anything without getting
free.
Something.
Right. I agree. I think that would be irrational to think. So... it's just one of these things where you You think you have seen the outer bounds of all the behavior that could come from a person, and you find out that, no, there's still more yet to give.
Absolutely.
Well, Rhett Rowell, Ed Carson, thanks for being here. I always appreciate the time. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Local news every hour and breaking news when it matters most. News Radio 92.3, WNRP, Gulf Breeze, Milton, Pensacola.